ಓಂ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುಭ್ಯೋ ನಮಃ. ಹರಿ ಓಂ. ಸದಾಶಿವಸಮಾರಂಭಾಂ ಶಂಕರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಮಧ್ಯಮಾಂ ಅಸ್ಮದಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಪರ್ಯಂತಾಂ ವಂದೇ ಗುರುಪರಂಪರಾಂ ಸದ್ಗುರುಚರಣಾರವಿಂದಾಭ್ಯಾಂ ನಮಃ. ಸಂಬಡಿ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ರೆಸ್ಪಾಂಡ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ದ ಆಡಿಯೋ ವಿಡಿಯೋ? ಓಕೆ, ಗುಡ್, ಥ್ಯಾಂಕ್ಸ್. Before we start the next series of lectures on another Upanishad, I would like to offer my Sashtanga Namaskarams at the lotus feet of my Guru, Jagadguru Sri Sri Bharati Tirtha Mahaswamiji of Sri Sharada Peetam Sringeri and Sri Vidushekara Bharati Sannidhanam, and also to various Acharyas for whatever I have learned that I am planning to share with you in this series of lectures. The next Upanishad I am planning to talk about today is Kenopanishad. We have seen so far three Upanishads, namely the Taittiriya Upanishad, Kathopanishad, Isavasya Upanishad. All three are from Yajurveda. Now we will see an Upanishad from the Samaveda, Kenopanishad, and Chandogya Upanishad also is from Samaveda, which is a very large Upanishad, and if possible we will see it sometime later perhaps. And at the end of each Veda there are many dialogues between the Guru and the Sishya, and either one dialogue or a group of dialogues they put together, that is called an Upanishad. For example, if you take Mundaka Upanishad, there is a dialogue between one Guru and one Sishya. Whereas in Chandogya Upanishad, there are several teachers and several students and several dialogues. So also in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. And if you take Prashnopanishad, there are six students and one teacher, six dialogues. So in the four Vedas, there are totally 1180 Upanishads in total. Of those, 108 are popular. And among those 108, Shankaracharya has written commentary on 10 of them. 10 major Upanishads chosen from all the four Vedas. And because these 10 have Shankaracharya's pioneering commentaries, there is a shloka which says Isha, Kena, Kata, Prashna, Mundaka, Mandukya, Tittirihi, Aitareyancha, Chandogyam, Brihadaranyakam, Tatha. So these are the 10 Upanishads: Isha Upanishad, ಕೇನೋಪನಿಷತ್, ಕಠೋಪನಿಷತ್, ಪ್ರಶ್ನೋಪನಿಷತ್, ಮುಂಡಕ ಉಪನಿಷತ್, ಮಾಂಡೂಕ್ಯ ಉಪನಿಷತ್, ತೈತಿರೀಯ ಉಪನಿಷತ್, ಆಯ್ತರೇಯ ಉಪನಿಷತ್, ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಚಾಂದೋಗ್ಯಂ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಬೃಹದಾರಣ್ಯಕ ಉಪನಿಷತ್. ದೀಸ್ ಆರ್ ದ 10 ಉಪನಿಷತ್ ಫಾರ್ ವಿಚ್ ಶಂಕರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಹ್ಯಾಸ್ ರಿಟನ್ ದಿ ಕಮೆಂಟ್ರೀಸ್. ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ವಿ ಆಲ್ಸೋ ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ದಿ ರೀಸನ್ಸ್ ವೈ ಶಂಕರಾಚಾರ್ಯ ರೋಟ್ ಕಮೆಂಟ್ರೀಸ್ ಫಾರ್ ದೀಸ್ 10. ದೀಸ್ 10, ದೇ ಗಿವ್ ಎ ಕಾಂಪ್ರಿಹೆನ್ಸಿವ್ ಟೀಚಿಂಗ್ of Vedanta from all angles. And all others, they also deal with the same topic only. And so studying 10 is as good as studying 108 or 1180 even. So that is the reason Adi Shankaracharya capsuled them in giving commentaries for these 10. And the second reason is, these 10 are predominantly analyzed logically by Veda Vyasa in his Brahma Sutras to show that Vedantic teaching does not violate logic and rationality. It is not a dogma or just a faith. This Vyasacharya shows in his Brahma Sutras, which is known as Nyaya Grantha. It's logic because it is predominantly logical analysis. And it is challenged by so many scholars also. Since Vedavyasa takes these 10 in his Brahma Sutras, Shankaracharya gave commentary for these 10, since it will be useful for the later study of Brahma Sutras. Sometimes we may perhaps go to Brahma Sutras also some point in time later. And of these 10, we study only 5 or 6 only generally, which itself takes several years. We already have covered only 3 of them so far. Now in the 4th Upanishad we are taking, especially in our pace, it is going to take even longer. We don't include Chandogyam and Brihadaranyakam because they are very large. I don't know when I will ever get to deal with them also. So we are now getting into the Upanishad, Keno Upanishad of Samaveda. It is a very small Upanishad with only 4 chapters of nearly 35 mantras only in total. And these mantras are in prose form. The prose form Upanishads, they are generally called Brahmana Upanishads. These are not a caste or anything. It's a Brahmana Upanishads. And the poetry form of Upanishads are called Mantra Upanishads. Mundaka Upanishad is a Mantra Upanishad. Keno Upanishad is a Brahmana Upanishad. And why it is called the Keno Upanishad? The first word of the Upanishad is Kena. So it is named after the first word. It begins as Keneshitam Patati Preshitam Manaha Kena Pranaha Pratamaha Praiti Yuktaha. That is how it starts. So because it starts with the word Kena, it is called the Keno Upanishad. Similarly, actually we have Isavasi Upanishad also, which we already saw. It gets the name Isavasi Upanishad because it begins with the word Isavasya Midam Sarvam Yatkinja Jagatyam Jagat. So that is how it starts. So it gets that name Isavasi Upanishad. But the same logic will not hold for Mundaka Upanishad because it doesn't start with the word Mundakam. But because before studying that Upanishad, one has to go through a ritual called Mundaka Vratam, where by tonsuring one's head and keeping a fire pot on top and doing a few rituals, so many things are done. So it is called Mundaka Upanishad based on the Mundaka Vratam. So each Upanishad gets a name for various reasons. You cannot generalize them. Actually, scholars start with Mundaka Upanishad only first, since it is a very comprehensive Upanishad, with only 65 mantras. Actually, Swami Dayananda also in his Upanishad courses, he also generally starts with Mundaka Upanishad. One should never start with Isavasya Upanishad because each word in it will give peculiar meaning, as we have already seen. Actually, we saw Taittiriya Upanishad first and then Kathopanishad, and because Isavasyam also is in Yajurveda, I covered it at that time. But generally, nobody starts with Isavasyam. They start with some other Upanishad. So one can start with Keno Upanishad, Kathopanishad, Taittiriya Upanishad, but not Isavasya. And that's an aside point, just want to mention. So this Keno Upanishad also, like all other Upanishads, begins with a Shanti Mantra. And all Upanishads belonging to a particular Veda have a common Shanti Pata in general. For example, Mundaka Upanishad belongs to the Atharvana Veda. And all Upanishad belonging to Atharvana Veda, they all have the common Shanti Mantra. Padram Karne Vishrunuyama Devaha. That mantra is common for all the Atharvana Veda Upanishads. For example, Prashna Upanishad, Mandukya Upanishad, they also belong to Atharvana Veda with the same Shanti Mantra. Here, all the Samaveda Upanishads, they will have the same Shanti Pata. Keno Upanishad, Chandokya Upanishad and all of them. And as we have seen earlier, the Shanti Pata is chanted by both the Guru and the Sishya. And what is the purpose of Shanti Pata? We have seen all this earlier. I am just only refreshing. And for those people who might not have perhaps attended previous lectures, just as a quick refresher. So we have seen this also before. The purpose is that we are aware the success of any study depends upon 2 factors, both of which are extremely important. One factor is our own effort. We call it prayatnam. We should have value for the study. We should take interest, initiative and a committed approach. It should not be a casual approach. It is not like, I will attend 2 classes and 3 classes. I won't, not that way. So, a tivra jignasa, that is required. This is called individual effort or the purushartha. This is a prayatnam. One should use one's own free will And one should not say, oh, it is all God's will that I am able to sit today. One should put their effort first. So effort or prayatnam is very important. And the second factor is, effort alone is not enough. We also require the grace of Lord. Because often, in spite of our effort, for example, I started the webinar today, the internet may not work, the computer may not work, you may not be able to dial in. So many things can happen. So Ishwar, which are beyond our control. So Ishwar Anugraha is also important. And how to get Ishwar Anugraha? In fact, one need not get Ishwar Anugraha. Because really speaking, Ishwar Anugraha is constantly flowing all the time. Like for example, the sunlight. It is falling on the earth. It is falling all the time when the sun is up. And what is required is, I should tap the solar energy. So here, the Ishwar Anugraha is already flowing and our prayer becomes a medium to tap that Ishwar Anugraha. And so prayer becomes extremely important for Ishwara Anugraha Prapti. And so what is the purpose of the prayer? I should be free from all the obstacles for the study of this Shastra. And so it is called Shanti Pataha. Here pataha normally means a lesson. Here it is not a lesson. Here it means chanting or repetition. So a chanting done by both the teacher and the student. Let us say it's for a temporary stay order of all kinds of obstacles. Vigna Shantyartham. And why we call it temporary stay order? At least till the class is over, I need Shanti. I don't want the phones to ring or somebody to disturb me, or I don't want my own attention to divert. So all those. So Vigna Shantyartham Patanam Shanti Pataha. That is how it is understood. Now let us read the Shanti Pata of this Upanishad. This is a very different type of Shanti Pata which we have not seen earlier. I will read it. And for the sake of a textbook, I am using a book which is Swami Gambhirananda's book of the Advaita Ashrama. This is what I am using. And actually there are, Ramakrishna Math publications. And of course, for any doubts and all these things, I refer to the Moolam. This is the Shankara's Bhashya on the Upanishads. Wherever there is some doubt or something, I need some clarity, I go there. But otherwise, mostly, these are texts which are commonly available. Any of them should be adequate for you to follow. So let us first read the Shanti Mantra of this Upanishad. Aapyayantu mamangani vak pranaschakshushrotram atho balamindriyani cha sarvani sarvam brahmopanishadam maham brahma nirakuryam mama brahma nirakarot anirakaranam astu atirakaranam me astu tadatmani nirate ya upanishad sudharmaha te mayi santu te mayi santu om shanti shanti shantihi. As I read it like a prose, because this is, as I told, this is not a Mantra Upanishad where it is recited. This is a Brahmana Upanishad where the Shanti Mantra also is like a prose form. So I just read it the way it is convenient for me to read wherever I think I can break. So in this Shanti Pata, the student asks for two things. He first asks for the freedom from all obstacles to the study. So Vigna Nivrityartham. And secondly, requesting all favorable factors, they must be with me to pursue this study. That is what he is praying. And what are the favorable factors? The first one is, all my organs, they should be healthy. Health is the foundation for everything. With respect to the health, one cannot accomplish and enjoy anything in life without health, whether it is material or spiritual. Always value health very much. Our scriptures teaches us that. Even though Vedanta says the body is not the goal or end in itself, we should remember that body is the means to accomplish the end. So the Vedantic student knows that even to sit in the class for 1 hour, I need basic health and particularly a healthy back so that one can sit straight. So he says, Mama Angani Apyayantu. O Lord, let all my organs, Mama Angani, all my organs be healthy. Let them be well nourished. Apyayantu. And what are those Angani? What are those organs? Vak, Pranaha, Chakshuhu, Shrotram. Vak means the organ of speech. Otherwise, the student cannot ask questions and seek clarifications. For communications, he needs to speak with the teacher. And then Pranaha. Pranaha is the Pancha Pranas. Prana, Apana, Vyana, Udana, Samana. Anything underworking or overworking. Hyperactive or hypoactive. That's the problem. So we want to make sure that they are all in balance. And Chakshuhu. Chakshuhu are the eyes. Shrotram. Ears. In short, Sarvani Indriyani. All the sense organs as well as Balam. Physical strength. I need Balam. Because all of them, they grow in me. So the first prayer the student is asking is for good health. Now, and if you pray for health, it will not come under, this is another small aside point that we should also take note of. Because when we pray and ask for something from the Lord, we may think that it is expecting something, so it could become a sakama prayer. It could be desire-driven prayer, sakama prayer. Whereas we are Upanishad students, so we are trained now to think nishkamataya, without any particular desire in mind. Because I am seeking health here, not for getting strength to hit somebody else or something, but I am seeking health for a noble goal. So here, even though we desire health, that desire is not considered a sakama prayer, but it is still a nishkama prayer only. And the second part of the prayer is invocation of faith or shraddha. In what? In Brahman. Both the Saguna Brahma as well as the Nirguna Brahma. I should have faith until I clearly know what they are. So Shraddha is the second part of the prayer. And the third part of the prayer, we are going to see the meaning for all of them. And the third part of the prayer is, may I have all the qualifications required for gaining this knowledge, which we already know this term from Tattva Bodha, Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampattihi, the fourfold qualifications, in whose presence alone knowledge can take place, sustained, and it can be beneficial also. So the benefits of the knowledge can be reaped only when we have these fourfold qualifications. And so these are all the three things that are prayed. Then the student, he has heard, I'm going to explain again briefly all the fourfold qualifications a little shortly. Then the student, he has heard the expression, but he has not understood it yet. He has heard the expression, Sarvam Brahma. Everything is nothing but Brahman. Understand, he is an Upanishad student. He has already gone through Karmakanda. He has already gone through Karma Yoga. He is now in Jnana Yoga. So for that person, terms like Brahman, Atma and all, he has already heard. So he has heard everything is nothing but Brahman. Sarvam Brahma. Sarvam Kalu Idam Brahma. There is no world separate from Brahman. He has heard. That means what? Brahman misunderstood is called world. See, you know, this is a very, very fundamental thing in Vedanta. Brahman misunderstood. If a person does not understand Brahman properly, Brahman misunderstood, that is called world. And rightly understood world is called Brahman. Brahman misunderstood is called world. And rightly understood world is Brahman. This is the basic Vedantic teaching according to scriptures. Brahman and world are not two things. Just as, for example, in the rope snake example that we have seen all the time, just as the rope mistaken as snake is not two separate things. You cannot count there is a rope and there is a snake. We only mistook the rope to be snake. So mistaken rope only is snake. So snake properly understood, if you understood snake properly means what? Snake is, there is no snake at all, it is only rope. So snake properly understood is nothing but rope. Similarly, creation, which we consider as the world, is nothing but Brahman. And what type of Brahman it is? Upanishadam, which is knowable only through the Upanishadic teachings, the Upanishadic scriptures, and not through any other instruments of knowledge, like perception, inference, none of them. Yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasasaha. Upanishad said earlier in Taittiriya Upanishad, we already saw. So you cannot define them. You cannot perceive that particular Brahman. So it is Upanishadam. It can be known only through the Upanishadic scriptures. Ma aham Brahma nirakuryam. May I not negate that Brahman or its existence. That means what? I should have 100% faith in that Brahman, even though I may not perceive, I may not be able to realize it through any instruments of my cognition. I should believe in the scriptures. May I not negate that Brahman or its existence, since until I study the Upanishads, I have no way of knowing Brahman at all. Because through rational analysis or perception, I cannot know Brahman. Therefore, the tendency will be to negate Brahman, because that's what people will normally do. If I cannot perceive, if I cannot cognize, I will negate it. This is why people become Nastikas, because it is not available for any scientific experimentation. We feel even proud to say that I am a rationalist. I am a modern scientific person. I will not accept God, Brahman, all those things. So the student says, let me not fall into that category. So I will not negate Brahman. If you take, for example, we tend to negate Brahman or Ishvara because of several problems actually. If you take Ishvara for example, we tend to negate Ishvara because there are many questions with respect to Ishvara, which are not answerable and which are not answered also. If one can accept Ishvara without questions, that is okay. The moment you raise questions, there are so many issues. The fundamental question they ask is what? Why did Ishvara create this world? And why did he create all of us? And all of us also, you know, moralistic people, good people, ethical people. And if we say Lord cannot change the people, then he is not omniscient, omnipotent. Because we say people, there are evil people, bad people. If the Lord cannot change them, then we say Lord is omniscient, omnipotent. If he cannot change them, what use of that Lord? So on one side, we say that Lord is omniscient, omnipotent. And on the other side, we say such Lord created the world which is full of all problems. And there are criminals, there are fraudulent people, there are diseases, there is violence, there is evil. All those things are there. And what is evil? If God is all goodness, actually one of the very big questions in all systems of philosophy is what is evil? If God is all goodness, why should there be place for evil at all? Therefore, I am not able to accept Ishvara as omnipotent. And above all, there are people who say, I am a great bhakta, I am a great worshipper, but still I am facing problems after problems in real life. Where is that God? Therefore, I don't believe in God. Therefore, belief in God creates lot of rational problems. Then what about belief in Brahman, the Nirguna Vastu? That causes still further problems. Because the Upanishad says, there is Brahman. And then it says, you cannot see it, you cannot feel it, you cannot smell it, you cannot taste it, you cannot touch it, it is unknowable, it is unthinkable, it is unexperienceable, it is uncalculable, it is imperceptible, it is untransactable. It is not available for any transaction. It is not going to make any difference in my life at all if I cannot transact with that. Why should I bother about knowing such a useless Brahman? That is what people will conclude. Therefore, Ishvara also is very difficult to accept. Brahman also is very difficult to accept. Therefore, any person will tend to reject both of them. So here the student says, whatever happens, I should not reject. If I am not able to find answers to my questions, I will struggle to get answers, but will never reject Ishvara and Brahman. And if I have not found answers, it is not that answers are not there, but I have not understood sufficiently what is Ishvara and what is Brahman. Therefore, O Lord, may you give me that faith until I am able to clearly understand them, Ishvara and Brahman. That is the prayer. That is why one devotee, you know, he gives a very beautiful prayer actually. Tava tattvam na janami. Your nature I don't know. Tava tattvam na janami. Kidrishosi Maheshwaraha. O Lord, of what nature you are, I am not able to know. Whether you are male, whether you are female, whether you are energy, or whether you are beyond that, whether you are here, whether you are there, whether you are elsewhere, I don't know what your nature is. But one thing, Yadrishosi Mahadeva, Tadrishasya, Tadrishaya, Namo Namaha. Whatever be your nature, to that nature I offer my namaskaras. That is the faith. Therefore, it is my limitation that I have not known. It is not your limitation. Your means the Lord's. Therefore, the student fervently prays, Aham Brahma Ma Nirakuryam. Let me not become a Nastika, not even an agnostic. Let me be an Astika. Let me have Shraddha, the faith. And not only I should not reject Brahman and Ishvara, Ma Brahma Nirakarot. Let not Ishvara also reject me. Ma Brahma Nirakarot. There are two ma's here. Ma. The first ma is let not. First ma means let not. And the second ma refers to me. So let not Ishvara reject me. Nirakarya. So Ishvara's rejection means what? Let me have Ishvara's anugraha. Let me not be without the Lord's anugraha, Lord's grace. And since this Shraddha is the basic foundation for scriptural study, the student repeats it again. Anirakaranam astu, anirakaranam me astu. So that is why he repeats it. So repetition of the same idea, let me not reject the Lord, let not the Lord reject me. Let me have devotion towards the Lord, and may the Lord have His anugraha, compassion towards me. Anirakaranam astu, anirakaranam me astu. So, with this, the second part of the prayer is also over. Okay. So, we are now just quickly seeing the prayers. Health, first prayer was health, I want to be healthy. Second one is faith. Both have been asked for. Now, what is the third prayer he is asking? Let me have all the necessary qualifications for the pursuit of this study. Tad Atmani Nirate Mayi. I am a person who is interested in Brahma Jnanam, the knowledge about the self, Brahman. Nirata means who I am committed to, who is obsessed with that desire, who is serious about this knowledge. I am not a casual person, but I am a committed person. So, with respect to what? Tad Atmani, I am committed with respect to that Brahman, which is otherwise known as Atma. Both words are synonymous, same meaning. Brahma means the biggest. Atma means the all-pervading. So the biggest one has to be all-pervading, you know, and vice versa. So Brahma is derived actually from the root Brah. I don't know whether I have mentioned this earlier. To be big. And Atma is derived from the root Ap. Ap means to pervade. So, Brahmati iti Brahma, Apnoti iti Atma. Both mean ultimately what? The infinite reality. So, Tad Atmani Nirate Mayi. I am one dedicated to the, committed to the pursuit of that Brahman knowledge. And for that, what do I need? Upanishadsu dharmaha e. Dharmaha. Dharmaha means all the qualifications I need. We have seen them in Tattva Bodha, Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti. I mentioned at that time the four D's. Letter D, D as in David. The four D's. Discrimination, Viveka, Dispassion, Vairagya, Discipline, Shamadhi Shakti Sampatti. All the Shamadama, Uparama, all those various qualifications. And desire. Desire means mumukshutvam, desire for moksha. So discrimination, dispassion, discipline and desire for moksha. And discrimination means what? The viveka is the understanding that the spiritual growth alone is the most important thing in life. Physical and material progress, they are only subservient to spiritual health, spiritual growth. So if I have a choice between spirituality and materialism, one has to choose spirituality alone. One should not take to materialism at the cost of spirituality. We need materialism for survival. We need materialism for day-to-day vyavaharas. But that is not ultimate. So having spiritual priority is called discrimination, viveka. Such a mind is called the viveki mind. And the second one is what? Dispassion, vairagya. Seeing material growth as subservient, as incidental. It is subject to arrival and departure. And therefore, that cannot be primary at all. So seeing the secondary nature of material progress, that is called dispassion or vairagya. Not being passionate or obsessed about materialism. And the third one is called discipline. Discipline is the bodily discipline, for example, to sit for 1 hour in the webinar. That also is one has to have. Then sensory discipline, to have attention during that time. I know it's always said, anyatra mana abhuvam na darsham, anyatra mana abhuvam na shrausham. The mind goes somewhere. And so, for example, even when during the class, when the mind goes somewhere, there will be a gap from up to what point mind was having attention, and when the attention resumed, in between whatever happened, there is a gap. So that 1 hour, the ears must be available to me, and the mind should have emotional health, which is freedom from all ragadveshas, kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, matsaryadi. So mind should have all the healthy virtues which will make the mind a healthy mind. Lord Krishna, actually, he gives an elaborate list in the Bhagavad Gita, several places. Let me have all moral values, which alone is a healthy mind, emotionally sound mind. And not only emotional discipline I should have, I should also have intellectual discipline, thinking discipline. That is very important. One should have a logical, rational mind to understand this teaching. It is not just faith-based, it is based on logic. We have to rationalize. We should go through so many. That's why Brahma Sutra, we said, is a Nyaya Grantha. So physical, sensory, emotional, and intellectual discipline, all of them are required. They are, all of them put together is the third qualification. And finally, the fourth qualification is the desire for moksha. Here, moksha means what? Inner freedom. That now I am slave of what? Of the world. That the world can make me happy. It can make me depressed. It can make me insecure. So all those things are there. I am a slave of the world and the people around me. So the people can determine whether I am happy or not. Who determines? The people around me determine. This slavery must go. I want to be master of my emotion, of my inner condition. This is called internal freedom. This is the fourth D, desire. How long my spouse, my children, or other members of the family or my neighbors will make me happy or unhappy? No more. I decide what my mental condition should be, that I decide. I don't let others decide. So these four D's, they are called here dharmas. By the term dharma, here all these four are understood. Let all these four qualifications be in me. And it is not enough that I just pray to God. I should also work towards them, because the Lord can help unless we are ready to put forth our effort. He can help only then. Otherwise, even the Lord will not be able to help us. The Lord cannot substitute our effort. Lord can only boost or complement our effort. So our effort is unquestioned. It has to be there. So the student appreciates the role of Lord's grace. Ishwara anugraha he appreciates. So he repeatedly says, Te mayi santu, te mayi santu. And then, Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Let there not be obstacles from three sources. That is why the Shanti is repeated three times. Namely, the Adi Daivika, the supernatural forces. Let there not be any obstacle from them. I want to come to the lecture. I want to come somewhere. Suddenly there is a rain. There is flooding. Something happens. So I don't want any of those supernatural forces to obstruct me. Adi Bhaudika, from any immediate surroundings. I want to drive and come. There is an accident. There is a road blockage. Something like that. Or my car fails. So all those things I want that to happen. And Adhyatmika Shanti, from within myself, so that I don't want to have any obstacle. So I'm not having fever, or I'm not physically well, or you know, some of those things for me not to be able to study that day. So all these obstacles, that is Adi Daivika, Adi Bhautika, and Adhyatmika, I want to get peace in all these. So I don't want obstacles from any of those sources. So Shanti is repeated three times. With this, the Shanti Pata is over, which is common for all the Samaveda Upanishads. This Shanti Pata is same for all the Samaveda Upanishads. Now let us enter into the text of this Kena Upanishad. We will read the mantra, first mantra. Keneshitam patati preshitam manaha Kena prana pratama praiti yuktaha Keneshitam vacha mimam vadanti Chakshushrotram kavu devo yunakti. This is the first mantra. As I told, this is all, and I read it like a prose, the way I think, you know, I can read it. That's how I read it that way. As we said, the Upanishad has four chapters, and each chapter is called a khanda. Chapter, khanda, prathama khanda, and all that. So now we are in the prathama khanda, first chapter, sloka 1, mantra 1. As I told, the entire thing has only small number of mantras, the entire Upanishad has. But even though the Upanishad is very small in size, it is very profound and very powerful Upanishad. Swamiji calls it as a chilli Upanishad. You know, chilli may be very small, especially our type of chilli is maybe a very small chilli. And actually this time when I was in Sringeri, they said that there is a local chilli available, very tiny chilli. And that has maybe even 10 times the spice of the spiciest chili we may have. It's supposed to be so spicy. So this is called the Chilli Upanishad, very, very spicy. It starts with the word Kena. So even though it is small, it is loaded with a lot of information. And it starts with the word Kena, that's why it's called the Kena Upanishad. So this Upanishad is also in the form of a dialogue, as we mentioned earlier, as a Guru Sishya Samvada Rupena. So as in the form of a dialogue between the Guru and Sishya. And this dialogue method, and there is also generally people ask the question why there should be like a dialogue. Because in the Veda mantras and other places, they are just mantras. Here it's in the form of a dialogue, more all the Upanishads. And the dialogue is essentially, that method is used to signify many things. For example, number one, one should learn Brahma Vidya from a Guru only. It is not like other secular knowledge. So this knowledge about Brahman, Brahma Vidya, one should learn only from a guru. Independent study is a highly risky proposal. If I am not able to understand what happens, no problem. Because only time is wasted. If I am not understanding, no problem. But if I misunderstand, there is a very, very big problem. Because even if a guru comes later, the problem of the guru becomes twofold. First, he has to undo the misunderstanding that I have, and then he has to teach afresh also. Therefore, however learned a Sishya may be, still one learns from a guru only, Vedanta. In actually, in Chandogya Upanishad, in Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, there are stories where the students themselves are greatly learned people, like Narada. Narada is a great scholar, he is a Brahmagyani. Even him, when he wants to learn something else new, he goes to a guru only. So regardless of one's scholarship, whether it is in Sanskrit or even any other thing, Vedanta cannot be learned independently. Because we see everyone here humbly went to a guru in the Upanishads. And the second reason, second significance of this dialogue is, it is easy to understand if it is in a dialogue form. And whatever may be our doubt, it will come out from the mouth of the student. So it is preemptive. Mostly whatever I think I may want to ask, already the teacher asked those questions and answered. So Shankaracharya writes here as well, Sukhartha Pratibodhanartham. Shankaracharya, he writes in the commentary, Sukhartham Pratibodhanartham, for easy understanding. And the third significance is, we find that every Upanishadic student has learned this knowledge from his guru, and that guru learnt it from whom? From his guru, and that guru from his guru, and so on. That means this is a traditional wisdom which has no beginning at all. It is anadi parampara praptam. Like our own lineage. I am here because of my parents. And my parents were there because of their parents, and so on. It has been there from beginningless time, which we cannot even trace. So this teaching has been there all along, which means it has validity and efficacy. It has withstood the test of time. And therefore, the validity of the Upanishads is revealed through its ancient nature. So this is the third significance of the Guru-Shishya dialogue communication. And in some Upanishads, the names of the Guru and Shishya are given. For example, if you take Mundaka Upanishad, we have Shaunaka, he was the Shishya, and Angiras was the Guru. Shaunako Havai Mahashalaha Angirasam Vidivadupasannaha Prapracha. So that is why it is declared there. So Shaunaka is the disciple and Angiras is the Guru. It is mentioned clearly. Whereas in Keno Upanishad, we find the Guru Shishya's name, they are not given. So Shankaracharya in his commentary, he says, you can supply that some student approached some teacher. Because the dialogue, it should have happened, some student has approached some teacher. Now we may have a question, how do we know whether a student approached the teacher if he asks? And if you look at the first mantra that we just read, it happens to be a question. And so there must be a questioner, a person who asks the question. And from the second mantra onwards, we get the entire Upanishad as an answer to this question. And therefore, we have to assume that this is a dialogue between a teacher and a student. So we have to add before the first mantra, Shishya Uvacha. So Shishya asks a question and read the mantra afterwards. Now the question itself is a very deep question. The very first question, the Shishya asks only one question in one mantra. And the teacher has to take the entire Upanishad to answer that one question. So it is such a very loaded question. Because the student here is a well-informed student. He is a student of the Upanishad. He has gone through Karmakanda, Karma Yoga, all that he has done. And he is now already in the Jnana Marga. He is already fairly well-informed. So to understand the question, then what we should do, we should also come to the level of that student. Then only we can relate to that question. And this student, he seems to have certain fundamental ideas from the scriptures already. What are the ideas he has? Number one, he knows that the physical body is made up of matter, which we also know because we have learnt it in all these various other lectures. So we also know that the physical body, the gross body that we see, the sthula shariram, is made up of matter. So body is material in nature, whether it is from the angle of science or from the scriptures. And if you take the angle from the science, what happens? It will say the body is full of chemicals, biochemistry, all elements, phosphorus, iron, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon, all those. And if there is imbalance in them, then there are problems. And so to cure the disorder, they administer only chemicals again. So it is material in nature. And if you go to Shastra also, the Shastra, what does it say? The body is made up of the five elements. Earth, water, air, fire. What is fire? Body temperature is 98.4. So that is the fire. And space, akasha. So this pancha baudhika shariram, that is what the body is material in nature. So therefore the student knows that the body is material in nature, and so he has concluded that the body is inert by itself because it is material, it is inert. So sthula shariram achetanam, that is the first knowledge he has. And second, this what the student knows is even the invisible inner body. Now the gross body, he knows it is inert, that it is material. Now the inner body, the subtle body, that's called the sukshma shariram. We have already seen earlier, the body, we have got three bodies, the sthula shariram, gross body that you can see. Then sukshma shariram, the subtle body which you cannot see. And the karana shariram, which is the causal body, which is the cause for these two bodies. So these are three bodies. And we can call causal body also as sukshma shariram because it is invisible. So we have already seen that the sukshma shariram, subtle body, consists of what? Pancha jnanendriyani, the five sense organs. Pancha karmendriyani, the five organs of action. And pancha pranadayaha, the five breaths or the physiological powers. And manaschaikam, the emotional personality. And buddhischaika, that is the rational personality. So it has got 17 faculties, that is 5 sense organs, 5 organs of actions, 5 different breaths, and the manas and buddhi. So we can mainly take here the mind alone. Shishya knows the mind also is matter. And now we may ask the question, okay, Shishya might know, how do we prove that mind is matter? Because at least I can see the body is matter, I can see body. Science is not yet very much sure about mind. Still it is in research only. Whether mind is brain or located in brain or outside the brain, science doesn't know. But Shastra talks about the nature of mind and points out that mind also is made up of matter. The only difference is what? Mind is made up of subtle matter, like energy, which is invisible. That is the reason also why the mind is influenced by matter. If mind is not material in nature, mind, you know, gets influenced by matter. That's why for many psychological conditions, what do? They give lot of drugs which are chemicals, which are matter. There is lot of actually controversy also, whether mind should be treated by counseling and diagnosing and all that thing, or whether, as many psychiatrists also do, they administer drugs. And why they give drugs? Because mind is influenced by chemicals. Even biochemical change, that can change one's attitude. One can change the mood. That is scientifically and experimentally proved also. And if mind has to be influenced by matter, mind must also belong to the realm of matter only. Shishya knows that mind is matter, and so it is also inert jada vastu. So the Shishya now knows this gross body, sthula shariram also is matter, jadavastu, and the sukshma shariram, mind, also is achetanam, jadavastu. Therefore, the first point is what? Body is matter, inert, achetanam. Second point is mind is matter, inert, achetanam. Okay. Then the third thing the student observed is, even though logically the body and mind must be inert, because both are matter, but experientially what we see? We see that the body-mind complex is sentient. Therefore, the question comes, how this naturally inert body-mind complex becomes sentient. The student himself solves the problem because he is an evolved student, well-informed student. He uses a very simple logic actually. Suppose, for example, there is milk. We know its taste. We know it's not sweet. But when you drink it, you say it is sweet. Then what do you conclude? Very simple. The milk must be sweet because of some external factor pervading the milk. Do we see the sweetener? For example, somebody added a sweetener. Do we see the sweetener? We do. We don't. Because with the sweetener, without the sweetener, the milk appears the same. But we know that there is an invisible, intangible principle which pervades the milk, making it sweet. Similarly, you drink, for example, water, salty water. Same thing. Similarly, if you look at a bulb, the bulb is luminous. Blessed by some invisible principle called electricity, the bulb becomes luminous. Similarly, the body-mind complex, made up of matter, which is achetanam and inert bundle, but this body-mind complex is now sentient, so it must be blessed by some invisible principle. And the student names that principle in this shloka as Devaha. So if you read the shloka, in the shloka we read the word Devaha. Devaha, he implies this invisible principle which he wants to understand. So now the student's question is, Ho Guru, I know that there is an invisible principle. I want to know what that principle is, because of which the inert body, the senses and the mind behave as though they are sentient. This is the essence of this question, for which the teacher has to answer that conscious principle is called Atma, otherwise called the Brahman. This is how the teaching is going to proceed. So now if you look at the first mantra, Manaha Preshitam Patati. The mind objectifies the world. Manaha, the mind, Preshitam. Preshitam means as though it is activated or propelled by some other force. Exactly like a bulb illumining the objects propelled by electricity, blessed by electricity. So Preshitam Manaha, propelled mind objectifies, patati. Patati means literally falls. Here it means objectifies or it perceives. Kena ishitam, blessed by which principle this happens? This is the first part of the question. Then the second part of the question is, Pratamaha pranaha praiti. What is that? Pranaha means the prana tattvam, the life principle, the pancha pranas, the respiratory system, prana, the excretory system, apana, the circulatory system, vyana, the digestive system, samana, the reversing system, udana, the fivefold systems put together is called Pratamaha Pranaha, the foremost prana. Because life principle is the foremost. Because without that, nothing can happen. That is why during sleep, one can go without sense organs. Sense organs of knowledge, they are all suspended during sleep. Emotions, suspended. Thinking faculty, suspended. Egoism, memory, all are suspended during sleep. So all the faculties can be suspended, but one thing has to continue. That is, the prana should be functioning. So the prana functions in all the three states of consciousness, in Jagradavastha, in Swapnavastha, in Sushupti. So it is called Pratama Pranaha, most important. Kena Yuktaha, blessed by which principle does that prana system function? That is the question. Prana is also inert, because prana also is a form of Vayu. So, Adhyatmika Vayu Tattvam is prana. Therefore, it is also inert by nature. Then what makes that sentient? Then Kena Ishitam Imam Vacham Vadanti. The Vagindriyam is functioning, the faculty of speech. It is not naturally sentient. If so, the dead body also should speak. Because the dead body also has got mouth. But dead body doesn't speak. The dead body has all the organs also. So what is that invisible principle by which the vag indriyam, the faculty of speech, functions, which is in it? So actually we have seen in Tattva Bodha, all the 17 organs, the sukshma shariram, they are made out of the 5 elements only. The vag indriyam is made up of what? By the rajoguna of akasha tattva. I'm just only mentioning. Don't worry about it if you don't remember. Otherwise, you can refer to Tattva Bodha notes. So finally, chakshuhu shrotram kavu devaha yunakti. What is that principle? Devaha. Sentient or effulgent principle which propels, which activates chakshuhu, the eyes, and shrotram, the ears. Even though the student mentions only 2 sense organs here, we have to supply all others also. The 5 jnanendriyas, 5 karmendriyas, pancha pranadeha, manas, buddhi, all that. Kavu devaha yunakti. If I can see the propeller, I would not have asked the question at all. Just as the sweetness in the milk is not visible, just as the salt in the water is not visible, or the electricity in the bulb is invisible, similarly, that extraneous principle in the body happens to be invisible. All scientific methods can never know what that is. So tell me, O Guru, what is that principle for which the teacher is going to the answer through the entire Keno Upanishad? The entire Keno Upanishad is going to be answer to that particular thing. And just the next mantra I will only lead, because we may not have time to fully go through the discussion. The just second mantra is Shrotrasya Shrotram Manaso Manoyad Vachoha Vacham Savu Pranasya Pranaha Chakshusa Chakshuhum Atimuchya Dhiraha Pretyasma Lokad Amrita Bhavanti. That is the second shloka. This is the shloka. Actually, this is like a capsule shloka. This is the key mantra, the foundation mantra, we can call it, of the entire Keno Upanishad, upon which the entire rest of the Upanishad text is built up. So every Upanishad, Bhagavad Gita, they all have one such shloka. For example, if you take Bhagavad Gita, we have got the shloka here, the second chapter, Ashochyananvashochyatvam prajñavadamscha bhashase gadasuna gadasuncham nanushochanti panditaha. That particular shloka, the 11th shloka of second chapter, that is the capsule shloka. The rest of the shlokas are only a commentary on Ashochyan. Similarly, again, the summary is given in this last chapter, sarvadharman parityajya. That is also the Gita Sara. Similarly, what is the Sara if someone asks here? Shrotrasya Shrotram. That is a very, very important mantra in this shloka. Through this mantra, the teacher answers to the question of the student about what is that principle through which the body looks like sentient, is sentient. That principle is called Atma, whose nature is Chaitanyam. So Chaitanya Swarupa Atma is the one that you are asking about, which is otherwise called Chid Atma. Chaitanyam, Chit, Jnanam, Vijnanam, Prajnanam, Samvit, all are synonymous terms, which all mean the consciousness principle. So Chaitanya Atma is the principle which blesses the body-mind complex. Then the naturally next question will be what? What is that consciousness for which we should remember the points about the consciousness, which I will again brush up in the next webinar. So this is the answer that is going to be built up in the entire Upanishad, in the rest of the mantras. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.